George Washington's favorite Bible verse was Micah 4:4, which talks about how every man shall be able to rest under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. To the father of our country, this verse from the Old Testament was a picture of what America can offer to its citizens, including to its Jewish population. And in fact, George Washington himself wrote a letter to three separate synagogues in America saying how pleased he was that in this fledgling new nation, Jews would be free here from harassment, the type from which they fled from the old world. And we see, unfortunately, in recent times, anti-Semitism has reared its ugly head, even here in America, even on some of our college campuses. Many, in fact, have even said that the October 7th attack on Israel was the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust. Now, I'm transitioning to highlight a book related to the Holocaust that you may have missed. This book is almost 10 years old, but it is timeless. The book is by historian and author Rod Gragg, and it's called My Brother's Keeper, Christians Who Risked All to Protect Jewish Targets of the Nazi Holocaust. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Points, and we welcome back to the program Rod Gragg, author of many fine books. Rod, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, hey, Jerry, my pleasure.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and start with you in terms of what prompted you to even write this book. And it's my understanding that this is basically profiles, studies in various people, the most famous of whom would be Corrie ten Boom and her family, who hid Jews but risked all in the process during the Holocaust.
Well, most of my work has been on, about half of my work has been on American military history from Revolution through the Civil War, World War II, and so on, and then dealing with other topics in American history. And so this was a bit different for me, but very important. I think an important work and important to me. I was in the Holocaust Museum in Washington 1 year, and I noticed on the wall while I was waiting for the rest of my party a memorial to a group called the Righteous of the Nation. And I came to realize that, learn that these were non-Jewish people who had risked really everything to try to help Jews during World War II and the Shoah or Holocaust. And I thought, when I saw that, there must be some amazing stories. And some years later, I was able to get to that and began to research it. And there were some amazing stories. So the book is called My Brother's Keeper, Christians Who Risked All to Protect Jewish Targets of the Nazi Holocaust. And it's published by Hachette Book Group. But what I did was focus on Christians who made the decision to try to help their Jewish neighbors during the Holocaust and therefore became members of the Righteous Among the Nation.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, when you think about it, we all have heard about Anne Frank, but the average person knows nothing about the Gentile lady who risked her whole family and everything, and her certainly herself, by housing Anne Frank and Anne Frank's family. Now, probably the most famous of the Christian Jew hiders, if you will, is Corrie ten Boom, who wrote that classic book, The Hiding Place. So why don't we start with her? Tell us about Corrie ten Boom. And by the way, one of my favorite quotes comes from Corrie ten Boom, and I like to say it. In fact, I say it every morning and every day, along with other biblical type statements to just kind of get my right frame of mind in the right way. And here's the quote from Corrie ten Boom. Look to others, be distressed. Look to self, be depressed. Look to Jesus, and be blessed. All right, Rod Gragg, you've got to top that.
Go ahead. Well, there's certainly great truth there, and that's how she survived being in a concentration camp herself with her sister. Sister did not survive. She did. The Ten Boom family were a family in Harlem, in the Netherlands, the father of the family was elderly, was a watchmaker, and they chose during the Holocaust, or Shoah, to hide Jews in their home, and they did that successfully for quite a while, and then were caught. And the Jews were saved who were there at the home. They hid in the hiding place. You can go to that home today in Harlem and still see that and see the hiding place itself, a fake wall that they were able to enter and hide. And so the Jews survived, but Corrie Ten Boom's family, all the ones that were captured that day, went to concentration camps, and she alone survived. And her story is in many ways unique, and also in many ways typical of some of the others in this book. There are 30 people in this book, and they range from, from German pastors, from social workers, from homemakers, 13-year-old schoolgirl, princess, just all kinds of folks whose faith ranged also from that of being nominal to being devout. Of course, most of them were mature believers, or otherwise they would have perhaps not made the decisions they made to risk their lives and in some cases give up their lives to save their Jewish nations, their Jewish neighbors at this time of the Holocaust. One who I think is really remarkable was a Chinese embassy officer in Austria, the nationalist Chinese before the communist Chinese took over China. His name was Fang Shan Ho, and he was a Christian, became a Christian while he was a child in China under the influence of Lutheran missionaries there, was educated, very bright, educated in China by the Lutherans and others, and then was educated in Europe and became the first secretary of the Nationalist Chinese Embassy in Austria in Vienna. And he began to give exit visas to Austrian Jews soon after Adolf Hitler came to power and began to persecute the Jewish people in Germany and expanded that elsewhere, of course. And he really took great risk to give these exit visas, these passports, to Jewish people so that they could leave Germany and go to China. But actually, once they were out of Germany, they went wherever they could find safety, and most of them went to Israel. Over the course of a couple of years, he issued all these exit visas, and eventually the Germans put so much pressure on him that he was recalled to China. But even so, he was gone. He had made it possible for more than 12,000 Jewish people to leave Germany and escape. There's another one, Trus Weissmuller. She was a Dutch social worker, and in the beginning of the war, when Hitler was trying to get the Jews out of Germany before he decided to imprison them and then execute them, they were allowed to leave, and life was being hard for them, but they could leave if they left everything behind, and she was trying to get the children out. And so she organized a system of trains to ship Jewish children out of Germany into Holland. And she did that for a long period of time until finally when things worsened in the persecution of the Jewish people, she was stopped and shut down. But
let me just stop you real fast. I mean, obviously, we know that Hitler was able to take over, you know, continental Europe except for Switzerland, which was neutral. Probably eventually they would have taken over that too if they could have. But anyway, so this, when this lady first started having Jewish children brought over by trains from Germany into the Netherlands, that was before the Nazis took over the Netherlands, or what?
Yes. Yeah, Hitler came to power in 1933 and began to expand his empire, so to speak, and he wanted to create what was called Greater Germany, a Nazi empire that would rival the Roman Empire, and he expanded Germany, took over wider boundaries since World War One, and then annexed Austria, and then invaded the Sudetenland, which is part of Czechoslovakia, then invaded Czechoslovakia. And all this time, France and England protesting, but really did nothing. And then he invaded Poland, and France and England declared war, and World War II began. And then in quick succession, beginning in 1940, with his Blitzkrieg, pretty well took over practically all of Europe. So Truss Weissmuller was moving children, German Jewish children, out of Germany in the beginning of all of this. Once he took over Holland, obviously that stopped. She was in danger but survived. But over the course of about a year or more that she was moving all these children out of Germany by train, moved them into Holland, but didn't stop there, moved them on into England because she was worried about being next door to Germany, and for good reason. She survived, and more than 10,000 children were saved under her program.
God bless her. God bless her memory. I mean, this is really amazing what these people did. And by the way, I just want to say something real fast. Adolf Hitler totally bought into Darwinian evolution. Some people could say, well, he distorted it. But there's a very classic book about this called From Darwin to Hitler. And the bottom line is, what was the Holocaust all about? It was all about creating the master race and weeding out those people that they thought were inferior, essentially subhumans. And of course, the Jews were the top of the list, but also Slavs were in that list, and the Gypsies and so forth. So the goal was, as Hitler saw it, to speed up evolution. All right. Go on with other stories, if you would, Rod.
Well, and I mean, that's true. And Hitler also had plans for the German church. He created what was called the Reich Church. And his intention was to replace the Bible with his autobiography, Mein Kampf, and to replace the cross with the swastika. And all of that was underway throughout the war. There's a story here that's really remarkable, though, and then talking about the German people. There was a major, an army major named Max Leitke. The book tells his story. He's a 48-year-old officer in the German Wehrmacht, the German regular army forces, and he commanded a German army garrison in a city in Poland called Buchimusul in 1942. He had studied theology at a Christian college before World War I. He was drafted into World War I. After that, he became a newspaper editor, but he editorialized against the Nazis in the 1930s, and so the party had him fired. And then he was recalled into the army when World War II began and found himself the head of this garrison in this Polish city. Well, there were 18,000 Jews there, and they had been forced into what was called a ghetto, and they were working in a munitions factory in that area, many of them. And he got word through an aide, and I would say that a lot of the Wehrmacht officers did not like the German SS, the Schutzstaffel, which was in charge of the Holocaust. And he got word through an aide that there was a large SS force coming to the city to round up those 18,000 Jews and take them to work camps, which he knew were really death camps. And so he notified his commanding general, who backed him up, and they didn't want the SS coming in to take these Jews away. And they also didn't like the SS. So they barricaded a bridge, and when the SS showed up, they had machine guns on them, and the commander of the SS column got out and demanded they clear the bridge, and they wouldn't do it, and this all under this German major. And they told him that, you know, that they were in charge of the city and the German garrison, and the Jews were working in munitions and so on. And
we have about 40 seconds left. Go ahead. 40 seconds left.
Anyway, the story ends that the SS backed off. They came back out later and got the Jews, but he, in that time, had been able to remove quite a few of them. All kind of stories like this, remarkable, inspiring stories in this work.
Well, thank you so much for putting all this together. All told, it sounds like there were literally thousands of Jews that were saved, just as found in your book, even in just those two examples of the lady with the trains and then eventually brought them to England, and then the first one you mentioned. Rod, thank you so much. Rod Gragg, GRAGG.com, for more information. All the best, Rod. Thank you.
Thank you.